Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, we have our Star Wars review show.
That's right. We warned everybody, go see it before this comes out. But because we are so caring and kind to our listeners, we're going to give them a little something to start. Like, if you haven't seen Star Wars,
yeah, we do have some other
stuff. We got some content for you, and then you'll probably want to stop.
But that said, though, can I say
this? Not that we're ladling on the spoilers, but we're not going to avoid them.
If you're out there and you haven't seen Star Wars, and you're still trying to avoid spoilers, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, it's a complete lost cause. If you wait 6 weeks and you're still trying to avoid what happens, then you know something? Yeah.
You know,
I'm just making that point in general.
It's still out in the theaters, spoilers. Right? Okay. So, I mean, is it only people seeing it the second, third time now? I mean, we could talk something about
that. So we'll circle back. We'll get into the meat of Star Wars shortly. But you went to Bruce Springsteen, who's currently on tour.
That's right. Just went last night. So I thought it was sort of an interesting story because although I've been to his concerts before and I've certainly been to a lot of concerts, I've never seen – I ended up with floor general admission seats, and I've never quite seen something operate this way.
When you say you hadn't seen anything operate this way, what do you mean by
the way
that?
They did the ticket? So
actually obtained, because I was about to say
not the obtaining, but actually the putting people on the floor. So
okay.
So first of all, getting the tickets, there is an interesting element in getting tickets. Myself and a couple of friends were all getting online. Anybody who sort of knows anything about Springsteen or gets involved and wants to get tickets knows these things all sell out in seconds.
Like, he's a big ticket album.
On Ticketmaster, it's gone. Well, it turns out this year, a lot of people had more success if you had the Ticketmaster app on your phone. And there's some definite indications that they might have, when the ticket ordering started, given preference, technological or otherwise, to the folks ordering from their app. Because myself and another friend who are using our computers, got nothing. I think we actually briefly had some tickets in an upper deck. And then when we found out a friend of ours had gotten these floor seats, tickets through the app, we said, okay, let's go with those floor tickets.
So let me clarify. You had attempted to buy tickets by going to Ticketmaster's website on the internet browser. Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't picking up the phone and calling anyone?
No, can you even do that. Okay. I mean, theoretically.
That shows how old-fashioned I am.
Used to line up at the Ticketmaster Hex or whatever. The department stores around here had them.
So you went to their website, you attempted to obtain tickets on your website, didn't have any luck, and yet apparently the talk is that if people had downloaded this app, that they got
it. And there was more than one person around us on the floor who said they'd gotten the tickets from the app, so it made us think that there's something to be said for that. And maybe it's not intentional, but maybe it's just that the app is better connected, because like when you do it on a computer, it kind of puts you in a virtual waiting room and there's a lot of processes and maybe
do you pay for the app?
No.
So it's not even like a 99 cents. No. It's a free app.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if the trade off is, do they track a bunch of information on you? I don't know. I mean, I guess you could download the app and then delete it each time.
So because I didn't even know there was a Ticketmaster app, and again, I'm not taking a Ticketmaster. The only people now that do this, or are there competitive?
No. Well,
companies?
They are the main one for all the big.
All right.
Places,
so it's not going to matter if I put the boot into them then, because they're the biggest. What do they care what I say? I have season tickets to a college basketball team here in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm a Georgetown season ticket holder. And I'm very proud of myself this year because I am now learning to go to games without taking my swipe card or printing up tickets. For the first time in my life, I'm using my phone. Yeah, where they scan you in. Strangely enough, though, I couldn't find an app. And it's all under Ticketmaster. So what I'm saying is Georgetown's ticket system is set up under...
They use Ticketmaster to do the distribution.
I've not been able to find an app that allows me to just press the app and get into the game. What I have to do is I have to go to the same website I would go on if I was at a computer, click to the particular page, and then bring my tickets up that way.
Well, maybe you should.
And so that's why I find this interesting.
Maybe you should download the app and find out.
Maybe, yeah. So I don't know if that works. But so basically, people who use the app,
they got the floor
seat. It would appear that they
I keep saying slipping into floor seats, but the way the Springsteen concert works is the floor is just general admission standing only. So there's no chairs at all on the floor.
Oh, really?
And it's just, if you buy a seat in the upper,
is that a new thing?
This is at the Verizon Center, big basketball arena.
Is it always that way? I think so.
Yeah, pretty much. So so it's general admission on the floor. So now the issue becomes, all right, now if people want to be up to the front, they're all going to start lining up like a day in advance at the arena.
Yeah, to get in there early.
And so I didn't realize this, but there's an established system for Bruce Springsteen concerts where the afternoon before the concert starts. So this concert was official start time was 7:30, but it started like 8 or something. But at between 2 and 5 that afternoon, you go by this door that you're ultimately going to go through to get onto the floor. It's like a separate door into the arena, like a back door. And you get a bracelet, and the bracelet has numbers on it. And they basically give out these bracelets through 5 o'clock. Now, yesterday we basically got, we didn't get our bracelet until about 4:45.
Okay.
So we're like number 800 and something. So there's basically 900 bracelets that went out to people.
So there's about 1,000 people on the floor.
Everybody's going to, well, no, there's probably more because a bunch of people won't show up. They'll just show up at the normal concert time with their floor seats and they'll be able to go into general admission floor, but they'll be going in behind.
Okay.
So then what they do, like the way they normally do it apparently is they will then at 5 o'clock pick a number between the 1 and 900, and that becomes the number one person. So the idea being you have no incentive to show up there and sleep overnight. As long as you show up in that window, get a bracelet, you have the same chance as everybody of being the beginning of the line.
All right, so if I'm number 27 and then they pick the number 28,
right,
I'm basically last.
You're last. Okay, last of these set of people. Last again, of you're the, ahead okay. of all the other people. Right. So
what they're trying to do is they're trying to discourage people from camping up the day before.
That's
they're trying to discourage hordes of middle-aged people hanging out on the sidewalks
set up a tent
to see
and
Bruce
loitering around
thing.
To get the front spot and stuff. It just so happened. So yesterday,
general,
I don't
to be that age.
Everybody. There were a lot of people there who are much more like they've gone to 100 concerts or something like that. So they knew much more. They did it a little different yesterday, where rather than pick a number, which I think was because it was literally just a big crowd of people. Like you're really supposed to line up in your number order, and then they slice the line. All this, but what they did is they did it by 100 number blocks. So basically, a guy came out with a megaphone and he said, "Okay, we're going to let somebody in. Somebody pull it out of a jar. They pull out of a jar." One of the blocks, and it's 1 to 100, coincidentally. So the first 100 come, or so now 1 to 100 go into the arena. They go get on another line inside of the arena, because they're going to be the first 100 in to go into the floor seating. They don't take you direct because this is all at like 5 o'clock. I mean, you know, the concert doesn't start for 3 more hours. So you go in there. They pull out the next block. It's 800 to 900. Well, we're 860. Moreover, we're right in front of the megaphone guy, so we immediately go in. So we essentially end up being the 110th person. There were 4 of us there, so 110, 11, 12, 13. You know, basically just over 100 people are going to get in before us. Okay. Then added element. They break up the floor general admission into 2 sections. The front they call the pit, and it's like the front quarter of the arena.
Okay, I know what you're saying.
The rest is general admission. And the reason they do that is because if they, even though they have general admission, if they had it all open, everybody keep pushing forward and crushing. So they create a pit area, and that area is only going to hold, I think, 600 or 700 or something like that, because they started giving out the bracelets of all the people, and you had a different bracelet if you're the front pit than you had.
So you have got yourself into the pit,
right? So we're in the pit. We're like 100 person in. So we go in there, and you walk in there, and you know the rows don't make sense because there's no seats, but we're effectively set second row. Like there's some people in front of us who have their hands on the rail in front of the stage, and we're right behind those people.
So how far back the stage has feet?
6. I mean, like, you know,
because it's not like the people in front of you are leaning on the stage.
No,
there is a small.
No, it's a big gap.
Okay, all right.
And then the stage there has like little pieces that stick out.
Sure.
So parts of them are going behind us. Like so, like little, like we're on the little Stevie side.
Yeah,
Silvio from The Sopranos.
Not Sil. This was Silvio. Yeah, his sidekick, the lieutenant.
His consigliere.
But was that Silvio?
It's not.
Silvio was the Italian, the guy from Italy, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, anyway, the guy always wears the banner. Anyway,
the guy from The Sopranos.
That is facing the stage. That's to the right. But so we're just to the right. So the center part where Bruce is going to be, there's like a lane that sticks out.
Okay.
And then there's actually lanes that go around the whole thing in a circle around the pit.
Okay.
Basically. So we're not only like we're up in front of the stage, but moreover, everything's going to kind of go around us.
So you're trapped in
there. When he goes like running for the microphone here, he's right in front. When he did Hungry Heart and he crowd surfs. He basically lets himself fall in the
car
at the far side of the pit, and everybody hand over hand carries him back to the stage.
So basically,
and he went right by my head, like by 3 feet. You know,
when this generation's Courtney Cox is getting up onto stage
they did Dancing on the Dark at the end in the dark, and he like danced with three different people. He's like, oh, you come up here, dance with Patrice Eubank. So,
but
anyways, I mean, it was a great experience. I mean, his voice is obviously rustier than it would be.
Sure, how old is Springsteen?
It's got to be in his 60s, certainly upper 50.
You know, it's interesting. Then you say that, and I think we've said this many times, but whenever my partner and I have had discussions about concerts and live music, I've always been one of those people who's like, yeah, I'll just buy the CD. As I've got older, I've gone down on the concert-going experience. That said, was it a good value concert?
I mean, it's an expensive ticket, but...
Hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. I had a similar getting an early to event experience this week.
Oh, yeah?
I went with a group of people to see an elementary school play.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were so excited to see, because it's all kids and everything, they wanted to see their kid perform.
They're fighting to get to the front.
I was told to go in an hour early and get seats into a elementary school gymnasium to watch a one-hour version of Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast, the show was an hour. I sat there holding six seats for an hour before this thing started.
Uh-huh.
And
were a bunch of people coming up to you and going, are these taken? And you're like, yes, this is taken.
Constantly,
like draping your jackets across, putting your arms out. Like,
I had jackets. I had a scarf. I can't remember if I actually tied my two gloves together and threw them over a seat. But it's interesting.
Did you get a lot of dirty looks?
I did, yeah. And we ended up in the fourth row in the middle, which meant there were one or two other fanatics who got in there before me.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
true. But quite a few.
You went through all this. You were seeing Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
I went through a downscaled version of that to watch seven-year-olds dress up and sing. I'm not sure what that tells you today, but that was my similar experience this week.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, there's an analogy there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, great concert. I mean, it was, you know, pretty impressive. I mean, when you had to go use the restroom, it was a bit of a problem because you had a lot of crowd to get through back and forth to get up to your spot.
Well, yeah, you got to take care of business.
We were pretty mild on the beer drinking during this particular concert because the...
So, what time did you get in there? What time did you take up?
So, I think we were in our spot. Like, so, they did at 5 o'clock. They start letting people in. I think by 6:30, let's say, give or take, is when we were in our spot. Concert starts at about 8. So it's like an hour and a half of talking to people and hanging around.
Fair enough.
Fun band.
So again, you saw a major recording star. You were in your place only for only half an hour longer than I was to watch Little Kids.
I've got a lot of telephone pictures. But,
you know, okay. Yeah, so. All right. So talking of deranged super fans.
And going to events.
And going to events.
Because that's where we start. Let's talk about Star Wars. So if you haven't seen it yet.
So if you've seen, we've given you 12 minutes to talk about Springsteen.
Yeah. Save this one for later. Don't delete the podcast. You know, keep your bookmark on it or whatever your little piece of software does in order to keep track of where you were. And you can commence this after you get out there and see Star Wars.
But in the meantime, go back and listen to our Star Wars special to re-prep you up
for
going to see Star Wars.
Haven't gone yet, now you have an opportunity to go do that.
I guess we need to, we've sort of thrown down a list here of things we want to work through.
Yeah, don't want to start first about, like, of course, the experience of going, right?
Well, it's interesting how we just talked about, you know, getting tickets and, you know, your experience going to Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. Going to Steven Spielberg.
Sorry, Bruce Springsteen. I'm sorry. These S's are all the same. These aged icons of the entertainment industry are all... I found it very hard to get tickets.
Apparently.
To see Star
Wars. That's what you were mentioning.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're going to talk about going. I have the Fandango app on my phone. So we talked about...
Speaking of ticketing apps.
I have the Fandango app, and there's a couple of local cinemas that close to us where you can reserve your seat like the theater. And so I decided, basically I learned these locations from you. I decided that if I was going to go and see Star Wars, I didn't want to be lined up for an hour and a half to get into the show and still be stuck in the third
just like
row.
Like we discussed.
Yeah, just like that. So I decided to get tickets on the Fandango app at cinemas where I could book seats.
I mean, reserve seat.
Reserve
doesn't
seat.
Have that, like, where you get, like, you know, oh, you row X seat.
X2, X3, X4. Those are your seats. Mm-hmm. You sit there. It's great because what it means is when you actually go, you can just roll in 5 minutes beforehand.
Right.
You're not sitting there twiddling your thumbs. I couldn't get tickets until I'm trying to think. Now, it opened the Friday before Christmas. I think the Thursday before Christmas. I couldn't get tickets until the week between Christmas and New Year. So the thing was, at least had been in release 10 days before I could even get tickets that were not in the first two rows
at a
reserved seating cinema. So that was my experience of going, was the fact that I had things to do in the time between it coming out and actually going.
Yeah.
And I found that quite, it's sort of a throwback to Star Wars of old. Now, I saw Spectre this year, the James Bond movie. I saw that the day it came out. I think I saw Jurassic World, whatever this iteration of the Dinosaur Park movie is. I saw that the first 5 or 6 days it was out. But Star Wars, I couldn't get tickets for over a week.
And so I think that's got to be a difference in different areas. I mean, I think in North Virginia, you're dealing with, you know, their prime sweet spot. We went to see it in Kansas City. We were out in Kansas for the holidays in the suburb of Kansas City. We were staying in Topeka. We went to see the concert, the movie in a suburb of Kansas City that also had the reserve seating. That was the motivation. And apparently wasn't too much trouble getting the tickets. I didn't have to do the buying, but it wasn't like they had to buy it weeks in advance. I think they bought
it. What time of day did you go?
That was an afternoon regular
one. Okay.
That was the first viewing.
So you've seen them all the months.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The second viewing, we did local to Topeka.
Okay.
And it was like the day after Christmas, like, well, what are we going to do? And it turned out the local theater there was running it at 9 a.m.
Oh, wow.
On the day after Christmas. Okay. And we said, well, you know, what else are you going to do the day after Christmas? We'll get some coffee and we'll go to there. And that was the 3D version. That's really why we went. Not reserve seating. And so we were a little nervous saying, boy, everybody's going to want to go do this. And we got to the...
This is a 9 o'clock show. Yeah. Again, 9 o'clock in the morning show. We got to the
theater, I think, an hour beforehand. And it was locked. So we were the only car in the parking lot. And there was... You couldn't go in there. You could see them cleaning and prepping inside of there, but they weren't opening the door yet. And then some other people pulled into the parking lot, and a couple people passed through. They must have been like, well, it's not open yet. I'm not going to bother parking. I'm going to go get some McDonald's breakfast.
They were driving around looking to see how many other cars were parked.
Exactly.
8:05 in the morning. And then
somebody else parked. Somebody else arrived and parked, and they got out of the car and then got in line in front of the theater. So, like,
and they didn't get in line. They got out of the car and stood by a locked door. They were the first ones, right?
Right. So they created the line. And as it turned out, this one had like you didn't have to stand outside in the cold. You could stand inside, but there was another set of doors. But then we felt a little burned because we were there first.
Yeah.
And now these people went in front of us in a way. So we ultimately got it there and spent like 5 minutes waiting for them to open the doors. They were about to open the doors. It didn't obviously matter. But then the crazy thing was, the theater ultimately only ended up having, it was probably 1/5 of its full capacity. Really? I mean, it wasn't close to full.
It's a 9 o'clock show, a 9 a.m. show.
On a weekend, day after Christmas, would we be the only people who would have thought, hey, this would be fun to do in the morning, and you knock out the movie and you're home by noon for lunch?
I have never seen, the earliest I've ever seen a film in the cinema is about 11 o'clock. What snacks did you eat at 9 in the morning?
I don't.
Did you have a hot dog? Did you still munch on popcorn? No,
I think we did get popcorn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because once you're in the cinema,
like it's not a lot of theaters around here that have coffee. And these didn't have coffee. Yeah. I would have just gotten coffee, but so we had big soda and some popcorn.
You can get a breakfast burrito. They didn't have some. No, I mean,
popcorn is essentially like half of the children's cereals are just popcorn, just with different coatings on it.
So and. You saw it. You've seen it how many times?
Just the two. So regular in 3D. And we did have a plan when we come back here, when we came back here to town, because we've got probably the biggest IMAX theater out at the Air and Space Museum, the branch of it that's out near the airport. And it's a huge, huge IMAX theater. And they're doing a 3D there also. And we were going to go see. We haven't gotten around to doing that yet. That would be a late night thing probably. So that was that. I mean, one of the things I remember you saying about this was all the mouth breathers, the people in their outfits. And you like to make jokes about people showing up with their lightsabers clattering on
one of,
their
one of the great things
people
about,
in their stormtrooper outfits. Did you actually see anybody like that? Because I did.
No, I didn't. And one of the great things, one of the upsides about not being able to get tickets for 2.5 weeks is the fact that you don't run into any of those
people.
I don't
think they ever went. I mean, I think maybe in a couple of theaters in every say this. City, you know.
I now want to take a shot, and I have been very dismissive of people that dress up in outfits and carry plastic lightsabers to the cinema. I've been very dismissive of you as a fan subgroup. I will say this to you all. The fact that the one thing that irritated me about the Star Wars movie was the fact that I couldn't get tickets for 2.5 weeks, yet you were surrounded by all these super geek fans who were proudly announcing that they were going to go and see it for the second and third time. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you morons are the reason I can't get in to see it one time.
It's a free market.
I don't care. I'm actually
the government to dole out.
I'm going to take a shot at some of my friends on the James Bond website. Some of them were announcing in the James Bond chat rooms because a Star Wars thread opened up.
Uh-huh.
And they were announcing, yo, I'm going back to see it for the second time tomorrow. And I'm thinking, what's the matter with you guys? You people are the reason I had to wait 2 weeks to go and see
it. Well, moreover, they're posting on the... Even if they are dual fans, can't they find a Star Wars board to post on? Why are they doing this on your James Bond board?
Things are a bit slow on the James Bond board. When, you know, Star Wars basically just took over popular culture, which I know we're going to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
No, when I went to the Star Wars movie, I was just surrounded by normal moviegoers.
Okay.
Normal people.
So,
like myself.
So the notion of these plastic clad stormtrooper types might be fictional.
Well, no, because all the cinemas said...
Now that they don't exist, but they're not really getting in your way.
No, but all the cinemas had said, you won't be allowed to come in
with a lightsaber.
Yeah, it's like if you go somewhere in town, like no guns allowed. Mm-hmm. Well, here, no lightsabers or other Star Wars. If you've come with a stormtrooper helmet, you won't get a ticket.
Yeah.
You'll be ejected.
Did you see it in regular or 3D? Like,
I saw it in regular. I don't do 3D. And I go, I know, I guess we'll come to 3D shortly.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw it in both. And you know, it's one of those cases where the movie's fine either way, the 3D. But it was very well done, 3D.
No, I've never seen a film in 3D full stop.
Yeah. There was one part with one of the big, they're not Imperial, whatever the big bad guy ships are. Now I'm blanking out.
The cruisers, battle cruisers.
Yeah, but what's the side called now?
What's the side?
The called? New Order, whatever it is.
The New Republic, New Order.
The New Republic's a magazine.
I don't know what. Whatever. the bad. The
anyway, there's a scene where that 3D was like a Jaws 3D where it's like, oh my god, it's like hanging over my head kind of thing.
So I guess we're gonna start with the $1 million emotional question. Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt.
Really?
Full stop. Sure. It was an exciting movie. It was well paced. It had bits of comedy. It had all kinds of elements we could talk about bits in turn. But I mean, have you really ran into people who didn't like it? I mean, we'll talk about some critiques.
Well, no, I'm not done, but I'm refining the did you like it? Did it meet your expectations?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
And then some.
Okay, because that's the interesting thing about it. And I think you and I had said at some moment in time, it might not be great, but it's definitely not going to suck.
Right.
I think I did find that quote somewhere in putting together the special. And I think that if we take that as our default baseline position for the last 2 years, that, yeah, it's not going to be bad. There was a certain level of, you know, it's not going to bomb. It might not be the greatest film ever, but it's definitely not going to bomb. I must confess, when I went, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I didn't have any expectations. I don't know, because I'm going to say this now as we move forward into this show. I really like the film, but that's not going to stop me hammering it.
Well, that's the funny thing is, and that's what's happened already. People are sort of like, if you're paying attention to the media, is that it started with, oh, it was great. But even the people who said it was great said, you know, but of course.
But what are you going to come to? But on the basis, if you said to me, did you like it? My answer would be, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a thoroughly entertaining 2 hours and 20 minutes that I thought it was very well paced. I did feel towards the end that it started to flag a little bit. I felt there were a couple of scenes, some climactic action sequences that went on a bit too long. But
yeah, if anything, like the space battle at the end against the station was
the last 25 minutes, I felt it sort of lost its pacing completely.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, the previous hour and 45 minutes, I just went in and I was just carried along and I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. For a film I really, really enjoyed, and I'm like, if you'd said to me, oh, we're going to go and see it again, I did sort of plan to go and see it again. And I'm not I'm not a Star Wars fan in the way you are, but because I enjoyed it so much, I'm thinking, oh yeah, I probably need to see that again. I never went to see it again. And strangely enough, if I sit here now and attempt to try and remember bits of it, it's completely gone from my mind. Well, and I don't
tough.
Mean that.
It's going to make it tough to do our podcast.
No, but what I'm saying is, I really, really enjoyed it in a very, and I'm not trying to damn it with faint praise now, because this isn't my criticisms of it. I really enjoyed it in a sort of fast food type way.
Yeah, no, I was about to say. I mean, and well,
listen, and that's what I'm saying.
It's supposed to be an entertaining movie, and this
yes,
is. I mean,
and it was.
This is going to be awkward because I think we're going to circle around a number of themes here, right?
Yeah,
and we'll probably come back to that. But I think that's perfectly appropriate. That's what it's supposed to be. I think what's funny about the way the movie came out and the way it was heralded is it seemed like it should be a emotionally affecting. Like in a weird way, like it seemed like it should be more of a movie than it was ever supposed to be. That it was supposed to, like, just because of the cultural phenomenon, the attention, you'd think,
that
oh my goodness, this movie's, you know, like, I think more than just the hype, but the way people regarded the old ones, they go, oh my, you know, you're going to go there and it's going to be a piece of fine art that, like, I will appreciate the subtle emotional nuances, blah, blah, blah. And there was some of that, right? But at the end of the day, it's Star Wars. It's a space war movie.
No, you know? I get that. But I'm now going to sort of take you on with your point there. Because I guess we've both answered the first question, the second question on our list, did you like it?
So, I mean, like, a couple of things. I mean, like, it had excitement, right? It had, like you said, it had pacing. It had these battle scenes and fight. I don't mean just battle scenes in terms of ships, but confrontations between characters that were entertaining and exciting and had drama and tension and fear. I would tell you it had parts that were way darker than the original movies in terms of, like, the conflict elements of it and the violence almost. You had comedy elements. You had these great little moments by Finn and by Han Solo, by Harrison. Well, okay, we'll go with the character names. Finn, which, by the way, here, interesting side note. I didn't realize how much the people writing this love single syllable names. I wonder if there's like a thought behind that. Because you had Han, Luke, Leia to start. Now you got Finn, Rey, Poe. Everybody's got these like, sort of short, almost.
Well, I know why. Because in space where there's no air, you can't waste it talking. Yeah, so Everyone's got a one-syllable name.
Kylo Ren, technically, is two more syllables, and maybe that's what makes him evil.
Meanwhile, the robots all have multiple-syllable names.
That's right. You get a whole bunch of things. But it is kind of interesting, then. I don't know if it would not surprise me, because back in the original ones, people used to say it was inspired by some ancient Asian storytelling, and
Lucas said himself he was a big fan of the who did the original Magnificent Seven Samurai and all that sort of thing. I want to circle back to a point you just made, though. And you said there about there was an expectation that it was going to be a great film. Is that what you just said a minute ago?
It was, I sidelined myself on the single notes. The one thing I was going
to
say,
I want to come back to that.
I like the fact that it had a lot of, you know, it now had a whole bunch of diversity. It had these heroic females. It had you know, different races and stuff involved, and it was pretty interesting. Except all the bad guys.
Because I said, before we get into the next question, is it good? I'm going to say this because again, I've already announced that I'm probably going to take some shots at it. I don't know if it was a great film. But here's what it definitely was a great film-going experience. So if you take everything we've said about everything in our discussion now for the past 10 minutes with you getting up to go at 9 o'clock in the morning and me having trouble getting tickets and making fun of guys in their, you know, outfits and whatever. I hate using that phrase cultural phenomenon because that just gets applied to anything these days.
That can be music, that can be whatever it is. This is different.
But I will say this about Star Wars Force Awakens. It was an extremely successful film-going experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's everything that it entails.
Which is pretty impressive given all the junk around it, right? Like, you know, it easily could have been garbage in the center because it's selling a product.
I know we're going to get to whether the 2 hours and 20 minutes is ultimately good in that very objective.
So in our notes, like in our little outline, we wrote it in quotes. I'm like, so like when you hear us say, is it good? Well, of course, what's implicit is, what does good mean, right?
Well, we're going to tell you. I'm going to tell you what's good. Don't worry. I don't know if I'm a partner, but
I was going to say, listen, it certainly looks good. I mean, it was well shot and looked fantastic. I mean, better than the old ones. I mean, of course, there's a lot more technology.
No, but it looked. But it had
exactly what I wanted it to have, which was it had a grit and a sheen, like not a sheen, a sort of a film on everything where it felt real, even the stuff that was made up.
Because it was real. And I forgot to bring it. But there was an article in Time Magazine did a big story, cover story about Star Wars. I think it was in the Time Magazine that came out the third week of December. It's got a picture of the robot in it. And within it, J.J. Abrams said, and this is something I've harped on for years, he wanted to use real special effects rather than digital special effects as much as possible. And I do believe that's why the film, obviously the cinematography, they put on some filters to make it look in line with those original Star Wars films from the 70s. But I also think it had a three-dimensional existence.
Sure.
Which the last three movies, those first two movies are great, those last three movies suck, copyright blinding voice, which the last three movies didn't have.
Yeah.
And so automatically it separated itself from the following three movies, or the prequels, as everyone calls them, because there was this commitment to filming something for real. And to come back to your point, it looked like it belonged to that very... to the very original first and second film that came out.
Yeah. And so looked good. Second part, I thought it was acted well. I mean, like some of the stuff people didn't have much to do.
I thought the new people were great.
They were, I mean, way better than
Frank,
Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher were in the first thing. I mean, Poe Poe is actually a little bit, which we're going to come back to. Poe had not a great, and that he's probably the most renowned actor in there, Oscar Isaacs.
Well, apparently that character was supposed to die. Well, that's going to say
there's a number of rewrites associated with this, which we'll talk more about that in our odds and ends section of this. But you know, the two basically unknowns.
Well, I'd seen
Daisy Ridley, who played Rey, and
John Boyega. Right, I'd seen him. I'd seen him in a couple of things. I'd seen him in an English alien monster movie, sort of a B movie called Attack the Block, which I saw about a couple of years ago. It was very good. So he was, I was familiar with him.
And they were both very, very good.
They were excellent.
Yeah.
I will say this about how successfully they launched.
Harrison Ford was good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was playing it fun, but that was, that's what we like.
But I'm not going to say this about that. And again, this is where it comes back to, is the film good? I do think, is the film good, and what did it set out to do are actually two very different things. In the way that reboots or whatever you want to call these things nowadays, they start in a slightly different place creatively. In a strange way, the film's good because it achieved what it set out to do, which was to introduce us to a new generation of characters. It did it so well that, frankly, Harrison Ford was great. But to be honest with you, by the time he shows up, the film had done such a good job in introducing these new guys that I'm not saying he suddenly got in the way, but if he hadn't shown up, I wouldn't have been bothered.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
And that's how successful the film was. And frankly, when Princess Leia shows up, I'm starting to get to a stage where you're actually in the way. We don't need to see you at all.
A little bit. I read some things that suggested she had some trouble acting and they had to cut up her scenes pretty heavily. And so some of this is the service to them that they got from the writing. But yeah. And I like that. If I had to say, you mentioned before the end of the movie getting bad. Like, so the first scene when they deal with Harrison Ford and the two gangs come onto the spaceship and have this battle, I thought that was the part that was like, whoa, this could really go off the rails here. This is kind of goofy. These two groups come together and they're chasing them around and the monster's eating them all up.
They got away with it.
Yeah. They then got back on track.
Because it's interesting.
On the second time through, that's when I scheduled my restroom break, though. Because I was like, okay, I've had my soda and I'm going to go because I know this is not that exciting.
I will say this. The first 40 minutes are so good in terms of how it makes you feel, how it puts you at ease, because, again, I'm sure J.J. Abrams has listened to these to podcasts like this where we have been very cynical because of the last three movies. The first 40 minutes, again, were so successful in terms of introducing us to new characters, not just introducing us to them, but in drawing us into their story.
Yeah, and being caring about it.
Like I say, there wasn't any need for Harrison Ford to show up. I thought he was great when he did.
Yeah.
It didn't get in the way of the story.
I think
it was a bit like, wow, in a strange way, his appearance actually underlined what a good job they'd done with Poe, with Finn, with Rey.
With Adam Driver, with Kylo Ren for that
matter.
You
did get in the way. I like the new robots so much that when the old robots showed up, I'm like, get rid of those two. I don't care. I don't care that R2-D2 is introduced. Send him to the scrap heap.
Yeah.
The gold robot with the British accent, he annoyed me the minute he walked on stage.
You really don't know C-3PO.
Whatever. The little new robot, he was so good that he didn't... He had his own personality, so he didn't feel like a knockoff or substitute for the other robots.
That's right.
It was interesting. Like
it was fascinating what they did. I mean, like, listen, it's a ball with a thing on top, and yet the way it would tilt and do things, you're like
watching it go down the stairs. It was all kinds of great
characteristic, like all this character to it.
So
that whole give and take with John Boyega in the Millennium Falcon, where he's like John Boyega clearly doesn't know what this item is, and he's like going back and forth. He's looking at him, and like he finally gets BBA to like tell him what to do, and he sticks out that torch for a second, like he's putting his thumbs up.
I want to digress for a moment. I watched again a film that I hammered a year ago, Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to watch it. It's actually a better watch second time around, although unfortunately the plot holes are even bigger second time around. Anyway, that film has the two robots in it, but the robots have scripted lines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
they're really just characters.
They're characters.
Regular, I think
what character. Was, yeah, what was it? They're basically a human
just without a
face. The amazing thing about BB-8 in this was he had all these wonderful human characteristics, more so than the original robots ever did.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet... Yeah, he doesn't speak. He doesn't. It was so weird.
He barely even like squeaks. I mean, it's mostly like the way he tilts and moves.
And
stuff.
It was very, very well done.
It makes me wonder, which is actually going to get into this whole. We'll talk about engineering of this product,
sure,
so to speak, because
that's what it is,
right? And it makes me wonder about whoever devised BB-8. Like, it would not surprise me at all if it was based on like. Somebody who knew psychological and body communication studies well enough that said, okay, you know, we could take a person and boil them down to head tilts and like the way they move their body, and so much is communicated. And somebody said, okay, let me just turn it into a round circle and a thing on top. As long as they can move the right directions and tilt and do these things, they will convey so much because somebody had done like a scientific study of people, not for that purpose, but maybe people have, you know, like there might be a paper out there somewhere saying,
what's the name of the guy that plays like Golem and then plays the apes in the ape movies?
And he plays the bad guy in this.
Oh, he does?
Circus.
Andy Serkis. I would imagine that they would use that. They could have used that technology on a person and then
So two motion capture items in this movie. One is the grand leader Snoke or whatever his name is. That's Andy Serkis.
Okay. He's a lot taller than he is in his other movies. Yeah,
that's a projection. That's kind of weird because I didn't understand any of that character.
I can't believe I've just said that I've just come out of a Star Wars movie and I didn't understand any of that. That really says something.
But the other one is the place is called Maz Kantina.
The girl, the woman.
Yeah, the orange lady.
Who was in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, Lupita.
Lupita.
Yeah, so that's another one that was all motion capture and done into that character. But everything else. Yeah,
well, what you say about that, in a strange way, we should not be surprised. Because again, I got ready for this show. I got ready for this show and really tried to think about the different opinions and positions that we had taken over the last couple of years. And I think we had both agreed in the run-up to this that ultimately Disney weren't going to take any chances. So you are correct. I would imagine no stone was left unturned to make sure that every character and everything worked perfectly. So while you say, yeah, they probably sat down with some psychologist, ha-ha, nudge-nudge, wink-wink, no, in Disney, they probably did.
Oh, no. Put it this way. I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me, which really goes to...
There was no tolerance for failure on this movie.
Right.
They weren't going to take any chances. They would throw whatever money they needed to throw at it as a product. And again, is the film any good? I guess we're going to come to our definitive...
Right, okay. It is
a terrific film-going experience.
Right, so this all gets to the question of which people who do critique it and people who like it who say critique is... It seems a little familiar, doesn't it? Right.
No, it's good. Okay.
the notion of the poor individual youth.
Yeah. No. Let me
on a desert planet. No. It's just the basic. We're gonna set up the straw man to knock down it, or at least I'm gonna knock it down. I don't know what you're gonna say about it, but like the notion is here's the person on the desert planet, no less, right? Just play, like Luke the first time around.
Let's play a game. I'm going to ask you, we're going to go new Star Wars or old Star Wars. And you're going to, I'm going to name something and you're going to tell me what Star Wars movie is it from. Okay?
Sure.
Character wearing white pajama, billowy costumes, living on a desert planet. Both. Is that old Star Wars or new Star
Wars? Both.
Both.
It's only a 30-year division. It's the same place.
Cute robot sidekick that does something and hangs out with the lead character.
That's right.
New Star Wars or old Star Wars?
That's right. Both.
Both. Villain wearing all black with some sort of basic speech impediment. New Star Wars or old Star Wars? Both.
Speech impediment. Oh,
The villains, once again, have gone with a massive planet-destroying structure that looks like a massive planet. New Star Wars or old Star Wars?
Yeah, it's both.
Both. Some character has some issue with their dad. New Star Wars or old Star Wars?
Yeah, both. But
that's a quick question. Because you don't know that he's his dad until the second of the old Star Wars movies. When you watch the original Star Wars, you don't know. Anyway, so there you go. That's the trick question. Yoda-like person in the movie. New Star Wars or old Star Wars? Both. What do you call it? An older figure who's an older archetype figure who sort of takes the hero.
Are you using Max von Sydow for this one?
No. Harrison Ford and Obi-Wan Kenobi are the same character.
Both. Right. They're not even close to the same character. But, all right, so...
That's what I'm saying. So the issue with the film, this is why I give it all the credit in the world for being a great movie-going experience. But is it a good film? No. J.J. Abrams is... I said at the time, J.J. Abrams is a hack. And whether it's his fault or not, this film is a hack of itself. And if this film was called anything else... we'd be all over it. We would be put in the boot in no end.
No chance. No chance at all if it was something else. If it was something else.
It is a cheap ripoff of itself. Have you ever heard that expression, if you put 100 monkeys in a room and give them typewriters, one of them might type Shakespeare?
No, that's not. This movie is an infinite number of monkeys.
If you put
will type Shakespeare.
If you put an infinite number of monkeys in a room with typewriters and threw them a copy of the old Star Wars script, one of them would cook this one up. One of those monkeys would come
up with
this.
It's an infinite number of monkeys, so they're going to put together everything.
But that's my point.
They'll put together a duplicate.
This movie was done by a monkey with a typewriter.
No, that's ridiculous. So that's like saying, you know, which James Bond movies have James Bond captured by the arch villain, almost killed, and yet he escapes? All of them.
No,
which James Bond movies have a love interest who gets knocked off partway through the movie and upsets him? Right? So that doesn't make the movie bad. There are themes to movies.
But here's the issue here that Star Wars, the new Star Wars didn't take the old characters and just do them over a la James Bond or Superman or Spider-Man, which is basically the same movie over and over and over and over. What it did was it took the old plot.
Yeah, which isn't that better? I mean, first of all,
it's not better and it's not worse, but no one should try and tell me that it's not the same thing.
Well, but realize the original plot is like a classic hero's journey type plot. You know, the reluctant warrior gets called to battle, says no, ultimately does this, triumphs, wins the day.
You know, I've heard a lot of this, that somehow the original Star Wars echoes some great, like you've just said, some classic plot.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other movies that have that plot.
No, they're like fairy tales, essentially.
Okay.
You know, or legends. Yeah. And that's the point, is that you're going to get recurrence. Now... I find more interesting is like literally the fact that it's on a desert planet, but they aren't the same. I mean, like she's all by herself there, and the other one, he didn't want to go. She goes off on her own. You've got Finn. I mean, the idea of a stormtrooper, a guy who's defecting. I mean, that's a fascinating story in and of itself.
Yeah, which
a guy who's on the bad side, who then comes across and now becomes, you know, the helpful person to the. There's nothing like that in the original Star Wars.
Boy,
but I don't. But I don't even need to defend it by its differences. There, people certainly you can look at and their differences. The point is,
sure, I'm not saying
it's a classic theme.
Okay,
now I'm gonna back off on something here.
Okay,
but I said the end result is still it's good. But I don't know how you go through all this and say it's not a good movie. But we'll come back to that.
Don't worry. I'm gonna support my viewpoint.
You already have. Like I was saying,
it's not a good movie because it is unbelievably derivative of itself.
But that doesn't mean anything. No, I mean, there's lots of like good movies that are derivative of other good movies.
Sure.
The thing is, it's funny that you say that.
But it's derivative of itself.
The funny thing is that if you come out, if you say if it was anything else, people would put the boot in. Are you mean in a world that there was never a first Star Wars? Because if there was never a first Star Wars and this movie came out, it would still be fantastic the way the first Star Wars was. People would be excited about the story because it's a very good story.
Well, that's the interesting thing.
Now, it's enhanced by the fact that everybody's primed for it.
Well, but that's interesting. I don't... In the same way, remember in our last show when we talked about the books that I read and we talked about how you can't read the novel Fight Club if you've seen the film, you never get to read the novel Fight Club sort of in fresh. A virgin fresh. The interesting thing, what you've just said, though, is, and I can't decide, I'm never going to be able to evaluate Force Awakens on its own.
Right, you can't.
Because you can't.
Right.
And because I've seen the old one, and again, I give the film all the credit in the world because it made me feel warm. It took everything, I don't know, it reassured my relationship with the first one.
Right.
And it did that by basically dressing up as the first one. It's a remake of the first one.
No, if it was a remake, it would be a remake.
It is a remake. It's a remake down to the fact that plot twists are all the same. One dude gets whacked by his dad. Somebody's dad, and then someone's related to someone else.
Who got whacked by their dad?
Han Solo got whacked by his dad. Spoiler. No,
that was his kid.
His kid, sorry. The dad gets whacked by the kid,
there's enough. But okay, all that said, right? It is not a remake. A remake would be easy. They could have rolled a remake out. In fact, you know, and maybe they will someday run a remake out.
Do a remake now. They've already redone it once.
No, but it's clearly ticking.
They're gonna make a third movie that's just the same.
So the point is, anyway. But all that said, it is clearly engineered. It is engineered towards an end of, like, these components were designed to be in there. You can say it's to be in there to be reminiscent of the old one, but it's also they're in there to be classic story elements. Conflicted souls. The most conflicted soul we have at the moment is actually on the dark side. I mean, listen, this guy, Adam Driver, is going to be and Kylo Ren is going to be a much more interesting character than Darth Vader ever was.
I was just about to say, that is the massive success of the movie, that in a strange way, the one character that they couldn't bring back, that easily could have been the whole...
Right.
That could have been the hole in the movie that brought it down. Yeah, in a strange way, the way that character was written, his performance, differences matched up with the obvious visual similarities on purpose was done so well. That is one thing that this movie... That's the one thing this movie did so well that the prequels were never able to do. The prequels wasted... They wasted the whole story of creating the supervillain.
People were just good and bad. And,
sure, you know, but what I'm saying is the character of Darth Vader is completely under...
Interesting. In the prequels, right? So I'm just trying to think. So in the original Star Wars, you really never had anybody who went both directions. You had good people and you had bad people.
Yes.
And there was no sort of crossover. The prequels did that. They started with Anakin Skywalker, who was good, he ends up bad, kind
Jar
of thing.
Binks,
but really did it just Liam such Neeson. A hack job of it.
Yes.
Right.
They destroyed that character.
Right. But partly actor problems there too. But here they're clearly throwing people back and forth. You got Finn going one direction, you got Kylo Ren potentially. The Silver Stormtrooper woman. There's no chance they cast her without more plans for her. I mean, she's like people don't even know this because she doesn't take her helmet off or anything, but Game of Thrones. She's a big star in Game of Thrones, and there's no chance they arrange for her to do that just so she could wear silver for the next three episodes and walk around.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think ultimately, to me, again, I don't think it's a particularly good movie, but it's a wonderful film-going experience. It's a very successful experience.
Isn't that what a good movie is? A couple other things to think about in terms of recurrence, right? It's Disney, right? And so Disney, like, everything here might have been tested, scientifically measured, and all that sort of stuff.
No, I think it was.
But you know what else Disney does that people say are good movies? They may not say – is all the animated kids' movies, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the notions of princesses and, you know, people who – are redeemed at the end to do wrong by their family, or they walk out, you know, like the Shrek's not a Disney movie, but, you know, all these movies, this is recurrent, but we don't go, oh, another princess movie where the princess is, you know, left out and redeemed at the end and people don't respect her.
Kids all go and see the same movie over and over.
You know, this is a kid's movie, by the way, right? You know, Star Wars is a kid's movie. This is the other thing that because of the baggage behind it, we like in your head, you thought it was supposed to be something else. When Star Wars first came out, right? You know, the first original Star Wars, it made its money off the fact that everybody from age 8 to whatever went, but it was kids. Kids love Star Wars. The reason we all, like, my father went to the movie, right? And he's like, okay, whatever. My father, when he went to Star Wars, took me to Star Wars, wasn't affected by Star Wars as a 40-year-old.
Okay.
You know, it was a kid's movie. So now we all carry this forward. This movie comes out, and we're expecting it to be an adult's movie. It's not an adult's movie. It's a kid's movie. Now, it may be a kid's movie that is also, just like a lot of these, you know, like Toy Story. A bunch of adults like Toy Story. A bunch of adults like other kids' movies. But that's what this movie is.
So I'll challenge you on the notion.
It's a fantastic kid's movie.
I'll challenge you on the notion it's a kid's movie. And I know we're getting to that sort of area where we're basically agreeing with each other but arguing the definitions of it. I remember when Steven Spielberg did and George Lucas did Raiders of the Lost Ark, it was a tribute to Saturday morning serials. And what that meant was we're doing a B picture. That's what it is, a B picture. It's an actioner. All that great 30s, 40s, and 50s terminology.
It's a kid's movie may be too strong to say, but it's
Star Wars is a B movie. It's an actioner. It doesn't.
But it's still making it. It's not a kids' movie in the sense only for kids, but it's making its hay off of kids.
Sure,
and that's what it was originally designed to do, and it's what it's doing here. And in that respect, I mean, isn't it way better than a bunch of stuff that gets peddled out to youth?
Yeah. So really, having all these themes that you're attempting to give credit to is a waste of time because it's a kids' movie.
No, that's the best thing. Like think about fairy tales. Like classic fairy tales are supposed to be these kids' stories, but they're full of these sort of conflict and familial themes and just societal, cultural, basic. They're legends. They're things that have been passed through since there was oral, since before writing existed. I just read something recently about that, that they've been doing studies of stories like fairy tales. And just like genetics, you can kind of look back at the history of these fairy tales and they change, and you can figure out maybe where they came from. And they now believe a bunch of these stories that ultimately became fairy tales and put on paper go back thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, it was brought here by the aliens.
When people would only speak, you know, when it was just an oral history kind of thing and you didn't have writing on it. So
I see what you're saying. I do agree with you, but at the end of the day, back in the olden days, they may have been telling these stories, but no one was charging you $20 to get in and another $20 for a thing of popcorn and soda. So I'm paying all that now, and you're basically serving me up the once upon a time from 700 years ago. I can't decide if the guy doing it is a mug or I'm the mug for buying it.
Yeah. The engineering piece is the part that I go, I did really enjoy it, but it's just like you said in terms of fast food, right? Fast food is good, right? Like you go, it's good.
It's done.
This candy is good.
And then you feel crappy a bit later.
Well, I just got exploited. Like my innate evolutionary tendencies to want sugar, right? Yes. Or sweets or things like that have betrayed me by these people peddling sugar to me. And I go, oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. And the reality is that's not what I should be consuming.
Exactly.
But you do anyway. So does that make, are candy bars good or are they bad?
Well, no, remember a couple of years ago, they are, they taste very good.
Well, but are, not they, good are they quote good?
No.
Okay. So see, that's like, so you
prove
can,
my point.
You can say it's not, well, no, you, that's your perspective. I would say it is good. And I'm saying, was it good? And you know why, this is why we put good in quotes. It's because we're using different definitions of what good is, and that's fine.
But I do want to say this. I do want to say this. And again, I always take some shots at J.J. Abrahams because I feel like whatever. He did a terrific job of everything that they asked him to do. He delivered. And while I've sat there and when I walked out of that, I thought whoever's making the second one, his back's against the wall because he's got to match this. But in a strange way, Abraham's,
he set the ship on Abraham's the right path. That's why he didn't give it to somebody else.
He
now.
Also set it up for another guy to take it somewhere.
And that's what I mean. That's what, like, interesting. It's like he's aligned it. He said, okay, here, folks, this is the path you want to take.
Yeah.
You guys can steer from here because
it was interesting.
I've now done the heavy work.
It was interesting. I listened to a podcast, and we'll put it up on the blog, and I think I send it to you to listen to. J.J. Abrams is interviewed, by the Hollywood Reporter about the whole Star Wars thing. And he talks about how, you know, first he wasn't sure if he really wanted to do it, but obviously how could he turn it down?
Yeah.
But in listening to it, when they started talking about his involvement with, and it's Rian Johnson, not Rian. We always call him Rian Johnson. J.J. Abrams refers to him as my friend Rian Johnson.
All right.
So how they collaborated. And I did get a sense a little bit in J.J. Abrams' voice, but in a strange way, from a purely creative standpoint, he was almost envious of Rian Johnson because he gets to do... J.J. Abrams did a terrific job of relaunching something, of meeting Disney expectations with all of Disney's support, of reassuring the audience, of hitting the reset button to unbelievably successful levels. But I got a sense from listening to him that just at a very base level as a storyteller, he's a little bit envious of the guy... Who's got the next one?
Oh, yeah,
one.
No, he said this.
The guy
I don't
who's
know
doing
how much
it next
of this.
Gets to take it somewhere.
And he said he's read the script, and now he's kind of regretting the fact
yes,
that he stepped
yes,
down.
Yes, that's right, yeah, which I thought was interesting.
So that's a good point, because it was almost like this thing had to be, like the whole connection into Han Solo and Leia, they had to realign it, tie it in, now everybody's on board. The next one could be a whole new thing.
Well,
and hopefully it is.
Well,
in some respects. I wanted to hit classic themes, but I think it's...
See, I don't care about classic themes so much because I've now had a couple of movies of these classic themes and I want something now more original.
In
this whole notion of history repeating itself, there is that school of thought. I say school of thought, but because not everyone, I think, sees it this way. There is that school of thought that Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than Star Wars. In a strange way, it would be fascinating if history repeats itself and Star Wars 8.
Yep.
And Star Wars 8, thanks to the work done here by everyone on this film, including the same screenwriter from the first movie who basically just rehashed over his old stuff, that they've done such a good job with Star Wars 7 that it puts Star Wars 8 in... the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, let's keep moving. I know we're going to get it. We got a couple more things to cover.
Yeah,
we're going to come back a little bit to the whole production element to it.
I liked it. Is it good? No. So I'm winning there. Where's the bell?
There's nothing
to
win.
I'm sorry. I thought we were doing a face-off.
By the way, I want to wrench. I haven't specifically cited it during this stuff, but there is an article in the New Republic. You can find it at newrepublic.com by Will Leach.
That's propaganda.
The Force Awakens, the game's all here. Oh, yeah, that's right. pretty interesting, and where really jives with my thinking about it, where he basically says it's great because it's a home for us. Like, you know, you could jump right into
it, and he
says, listen, a bunch of these things are on the nose. Okay, they're on the nose kind of thing.
No, again, it's an unbelievably terrific experience.
We should put a link to that because I thought it was really good.
Send it to me. I'll throw it up on the blog.
He's a good writer generally.
All right, so what's next for the franchise?
That's what's next for them, which is what you were just alluding to, right? So the next movie comes out in 2 years. I will tell you, when I told my nephew this, he was a little upset. In 2 years, you know, he was all fired up to go see another one. My nephew,
but he's got another.
Way,
he's got
nephew,
another one
way,
coming.
Who had whole like he had whole theory. Like when I talked to him about this movie, he had all theories about what was going on. And here's a guy. I mean, he's seen the other ones, and he's
there. You go. He's seen
old.
The other ones,
right? No, but he had like whole ideas of how it was going to go. And I said, okay,
just troll the old ones to figure out how.
So
these
in the
ones
meantime, in between this one and the next one coming out next holiday season, I think that's what they're targeting.
Rogue Squadron
is actually a video game Star Wars.
Okay, sorry.
So, or a book series. I don't. Some of this.
This
so
is
Rogue One, which is it's the first of what they're calling Star Wars story. So it's like Rogue One, a Star Wars story
universe.
No, but that's like the title is literally a Star Wars. Like I've seen I don't know if it's the real one or a mock-up where it has the name and then underneath it says a Star Wars story. The plot for this, this doesn't spoil anything, but tell the plot. In the original Star Wars, you remember, they start with a plan for the Death Star.
Yeah.
We have this plan. It's in R2-D2. That's what we've got.
That's
we're
right.
trying to move around. This is the story of how they got the plans. And it's totally not going to have any of the regular characters.
Darth Vader might make an appearance. That is a rumor.
Oh, yeah.
I saw an internet rumor this week.
Yeah, maybe he'll be in the background or something like that. It's going to be a group of spies or, you know,
it's an X-Wing squad, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited to see this.
Forrest Whitaker just announces being in it. Mads Mikkelsen. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but he's from the Casino Royale.
He was
the
villain in Casino Royale. Hannibal.
Yeah, right. So he's going to be in it. One of the interesting things people have been talking about is there's a picture of them all.
Directed by Gareth Thomas. Gareth Edwards.
What's he
Gareth. He did Godzilla, English director.
There's a picture of them all like in a room set up in a certain way. And apparently a bunch of people think it looks the same as, you know, when Rey touches the lightsaber and she has this flash to where, like, the Knights of Ren, it's all these black clad figures. It's supposed to be the Knights of Ren. It's the people who like work around Kylo Ren coming to kill Luke Skywalker. And it never really comes to pass. The thing she just has a vision. Well, a bunch of people have like checked them and think they're designed to match up. And so there's some theory that this Rogue Squadron, but that doesn't matter. That's, I just want to throw that out. But I, you know, it, and when I told this story, I said to my nephew, I said, oh, you know, in between we've got this movie and it's going to be about stealing the plans. And he's like, oh, that'll be really interesting.
I am interested to see this film. I'm also interested to see how well it does. And in a strange way, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm constantly moving the goalposts, and I don't mean to do that, because every one of these films is the new sort of bar that needs to be set, or it's facing some sort of litmus test. But the next film will be a test of how much this notion that Disney have paid for, people don't just want Star Wars movies with certain characters, they want to have this whole world. It will be interesting. I think this movie will test that theory.
Right.
If that movie's successful, then Disney are correct and have got their money back. But if next year comes around and the movie either A is not great, or people sort of go, you know, I can give or take it, then that is sort of they're in this big risk-reward situation with this whole franchise, and this is sort of the risk to see what the reward is, to see can they spin it out into other places, but also how well it spins out in terms of how well it's made and how well it does. I think there's some signs in there to see the kind of legs this franchise really has. Because again, the strange way, I didn't think anyone was sitting around going, oh, Force Awakens, yeah, it's got me going for a whole new set of movies. Force Awakens wanted to purge your memory of the last three movies and remind you that there is this great franchise there.
Mm-hmm.
The standard test in any movie series is the same. Is, well, what do you do when you have to do Mission Impossible 7 or James Bond 25? That I think next year we're going to have an early indicator on what kind of legs does Star Wars, the franchise, have. Can you just throw a name? Can you slap a badge on it and get away with it? And I'm not suggesting that's going to happen, but I am actually curious to see this film.
If the people involved are doing this, we're probably having the same discussion about how, like, hey, this is engineered to please.
I don't bet against them, but here's the thing now. All through this show, we've talked about everything being product tested and engineered. It's not a creative thing, exercise. It is very much a mechanical one. I'm not sure. You still need, because you're now, a year from now, you've got new characters in a familiar world. Well, you can't just keep engineering stuff. Otherwise, everyone would be doing it. We're going to see, where's the creative part of this? I'm not sure I'm really verbalizing what I mean, but
every story has been told, like, I'm sure it won't draw from the prior Star Wars, but, you know, maybe they'll draw from more movies. Maybe they'll draw, you know, like,
yeah, and that's
like,
a test. Do people want that? I'm not saying you're wrong. That's why I'm looking, in a strange way, I'm actually looking forward to seeing that one. Whereas this one, I don't need to see this one again.
It was great.
I loved it.
It's not very good.
It's not very original, but I don't need to see it again.
It was great.
The next one, good. I want to get down there and
one
see.
Of the other prequels they're talking about doing is a Han Solo prequel, sort of like where Han Solo came from. No. That one makes people more nervous because it feels like here, because it's really a fresh story, and there's got to be so many. If you like examine like Star Wars, how many fresh stories can you come like by something to, you know, maybe there's a story about Lando Calrissian, how he came to be, or something like that. But
apparently, here, the Boba Fett one has gone on the back burner.
About if you had a pretty cool story on Han Solo, could be so loaded in what people are expecting, kind of thing. It's a lot of drama to that.
Do you know what's killed that move? Do you know what's killed the success of the Han Solo prequel? Is how great it was having the real Han Solo in this movie.
Right.
If Han Solo doesn't appear in this movie, Let's imagine Force Awakens doesn't have some of these characters.
I can't remember.
I understand Force Awakens is about Luke Skywalker and all of them. Again, Princess Leia, completely surplus to requirements. Han Solo was great. But what I'm saying is if you could have written Force Awakens without Han Solo, then I think your prequel, your Han Solo prequel, actually might start in a better place. But having Han Solo roll on screen for an hour and 50 minutes in this film and hit every beat with him and Chewbacca and everything that you loved about Han Solo when you first saw him 40 years ago, Han Solo is Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford is Han Solo. This isn't James Bond. This isn't Spider-Man. This isn't Batman. We're not looking for someone else to play that guy. Harrison Ford is Han Solo. And unfortunately, having Han Solo be brilliant once more as Harrison Ford has actually put, for me, it's the death knell for anyone trying to do a Han Solo prequel movie.
There's an article from...
You just won't make it work.
There's an article from The Atlantic, not affiliated with The Atlantic.
Not yet, nothing to do with us.
For about Disney prequel shortlist for actors for young Han Solo.
Dave Franco, I think the guy from Whiplash.
No, those aren't people aren't young. Well, the guy
those
from
are
Whiplash,
the Miles Pella.
Dave Franco is not.
His name has been thrown around.
Considering the movie's not coming out until 2018.
I personally don't think the Han Solo movie. I don't think I have to stop myself because I'm getting my Han Solos and my Harrison Fords confused. I don't think the Han Solo movie's got legs. I don't think that'll ever see the light of day.
Yeah, well, you didn't think this was going to work either.
No, I didn't.
A couple of little odds and ends that I wanted to throw in there. One of the things that's out there you can look around is people looking at... There are holes in this movie.
Really?
Be cynical.
I am being cynical.
I mean, all movies
because
have
it
holes.
Was a cynical we attempt talk about the at holes making in James me feel good Bond about movies? Myself.
But there are pieces... There's a lot of... Actually, this isn't like just speculation... But there were some last-minute changes to that movie to the point where if you go out, you could buy a figurine in the toy store of this particular guy who is supposed to be on the desert planet who never appears in the movie because he was originally, you know, when Finn goes and saves or like he doesn't end up saving her, but he runs over to her when the other people are trying to grab BB-8. Apparently, the constable originally stepped in and they're like – it's too much stuff. We're cutting him out. And
I think your silver, suited woman's part got cut down quite a bit too.
Yeah, no,
because again, I do think the one interesting thing about the film that we touched on a while ago, you know, Finn, the notion of Finn as some sort of stormtrooper who's gone sour, mm-hmm. that was never really explored. I hope that gets explored because that's a fascinating idea.
There are two books that came out the same time as all this stuff that are young adult books.
Okay.
And one is about Finn and one is about, I think, Poe. I can't remember. But they're about characters. And it's like the story of Finn in training. Stormtrooper training. I mean, and so a bunch of people say if you read it, it actually gives you a whole bunch of real. It's supposed to be canon. It's supposed to be like real. Well, he was supposed to be like a star stormtrooper in his story.
He got beaten up in the toilet.
They said it's the opposite. He was like a big star in the prequel.
The bully.
Yeah. But he was a very successful training warrior.
Yeah.
When it came to kill people.
I think that's going to be an interesting story.
Like the other big one, like we mentioned already, is Poe was supposed to in the original script die in that crash. And when they got Oscar Isaacs and they saw this stuff, they said, no, we want to keep him. So there's a real weird element to this, right? So in theory,
Poe disappears and he just comes back and within one line, yeah, I escaped and ran onto the thing.
Well, and moreover,
they didn't even bother. They were just,
why did Poe come back to that planet? Remember, he makes him go back to... Because Finn didn't want to come to the planet, but Poe's going to go back to the planet to get BB-8.
Okay.
So now let's say Poe lives through the crash.
Okay.
He then takes off. Like, he landed on the planet he was trying to get to. He's alive. He doesn't go looking for BB-8. He just splits, and instead we end up with BB-8 with the other thing. You know?
Yeah.
The other... Like, apparently, in the prequel trailers, you might remember, there's a shot of a hand giving a lightsaber to a female hand.
Yeah.
And it's a shot of Maz... Kanata, whatever it is, the orange woman, handing a lightsaber to Leia. Well, that never happens in the movie.
No.
In fact, Maz never even leaves her place. And so apparently they decided, and then they've said this. It's interesting that they're talking this much about the things behind the scene, but maybe they knew this will keep people talking. But they said they wrote it, like they had scenes with her, like where she went with Han Solo to the rebellion era, whatever the right word is for that group. and Resistance.
New Republic.
Resistance. No, they're the Resistance.
New Resistance.
Yeah, just the Resistance.
Okay.
She goes to the place, and they realized there was no point, right? So now they cut that out, but now they had to figure out how to get the lightsaber into the hands, and so they wrote that whole scene where Rey goes underneath the place and finds the lightsaber.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that wasn't in
the
original
script. That's
when BBS
goes down the stairs.
The fact that they cut Maz's visit to the Resistance out meant they had to do all this other writing to create a scene, which a bunch of people thought, this is kind of weird. Like, why was she like, oh, suddenly it's a big shock, and they had these flashbacks. But all apparently that was added in just so they could move the lightsaber to where it was supposed to be.
Okay.
There was something else I thought of that was similar in that in terms of engineering. There's a bunch of things where I did. And you know, you remember, it was rewritten because it was originally going to be written by
Michael Arndt.
And they had to come back.
They didn't like it. So Kasdan,
Abrams and Kasdan's rewrite of Michael Arndt's original episode 7. I'm reading out of an article from, if you
can believe,
can
quote from
Earth Movies Death.
I can quote from the podcast. Abrams said that we ditched the story and we took his ideas. And
apparently there was something where Millennium Falcon was supposed to crash, and then they had to redo this. Enough about that. But another couple trivia points. Cameos
everywhere.
Right, so
Simon Pegg
is the doughy guy who runs the junkyard type place.
And I've heard stories too.
I don't know this enough, but the guy, the kind of heavy bearded guy who's a pilot.
It's Kevin Smith?
No,
Kevin Smith,
although Kevin Smith has something. Well, he's some guy who's been in all these J.J. Abrams things.
Yeah,
he was in Felicity and all that.
Apparently, we'll get to the big one in a minute. And JJ very publicly thanked Simon Pegg. And Simon Pegg is actually,
Simon Pegg, by the way, for people who don't know, he's the Mission Impossible
side. And he's Scotty in the new Star Trek. Simon Pegg is getting a screenwriter's, he's getting a screenwriter's credit for the new Star Trek movie, Star Trek Beyond or whatever it's called.
I think it's called Beyond or something.
There are some stories out there that he got an uncredited go over rewrite to do some script polishing on the script that Kasdan and J.J. Abrams
did. How about that?
Yeah. But Pegg didn't want any credit, and he's in it, and he was geeked up to be in it. And J.J. Abrams went on Twitter and a couple of other places and said, I just want to once more thank Simon Pegg, my really good friend Simon Pegg, for all his support during the Star Wars movie. So obviously they're quite tight.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that Pegg...
He probably knows his name is Abrams.
Whatever. But Pegg's is going to be one of the credited writers for the Star Trek Beyond. But apparently the story is that he also was thrown the script to this one and say, hey, can you polish some sections of this and this type of thing? So,
Do you want to tell... You should really tell cameo story.
The main cameo really, is... James Bond is in Star Wars.
Yeah.
I read this, and apparently back in the summer, Pegg had let it go on Twitter... That because Star Wars was filming at Pinewood in England, next door to Spectre that was filming in Pinewood, and Pegg put it up on Twitter that Daniel Craig was playing a stormtrooper. Craig denied it, and then of course in the film there's the one scene where the girl is tied up and she tries to use the mind force on the stormtrooper.
It says you will unshackle me and blah blah blah.
That is Daniel Craig.
So yeah, Daniel Craig in that suit. And so apparently they said that little scene about the dropping of the gun. So people don't remember the scene. She basically says, "You will unlock me," blah blah blah, and I will unlock you. Yeah. And then as he's walking out the door, she thinks to herself, "Oh, you'll drop that gun." And I'm dropping the gun.
Yeah.
Apparently that piece was like an add-on, like not ad-libbed. It's not like they just made it up, but it was not in the original script.
Ewan McGregor.
And they came up with this idea.
Ewan McGregor has an audio cameo.
Yeah, but that's kind of cheating. Basically,
came in to record it. Well, yeah, used an old recording of Alec Guinness.
Well, because he's not alive.
Well, of course. But Ewan McGregor came in to record fresh dialogue, which they merged with Alec Guinness dialogue.
But that's not really a cameo because they're still coming back as their regular characters, albeit for like a brief thing. I mean, it's not like they're doing. I think the other ones are more interesting. Sort of
appearances. Who else get lame?
I think Kevin Smith
was in it.
Yeah, there's something like that, but I don't know who he was.
Thing, and there's someone else who I've now forgotten.
Some people talked about like some of the characters, like the short guy who's a X-wing fighter, the alien with the funny like flappy face. Like he was in the originals. And so the theory is, well, it's been 30 years. I mean, some of these people could be still working, you know, an Admiral Akbar and, you know, like a bunch of these sort of characters that like sort of.
And there's a whole load of
people that everybody always loved the first time around.
Well, it's the same guy who plays Chewbacca. It's actually the same actor. And I think the same guy who plays like that fish The Red Bull?
Admiral Akbar.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one in the original one, he says, it's a trap.
It's a trap. Yeah. Yeah, well, he actually said it like, it's a trap. He says it that way. And he moves up and down in his seat like I just did.
Yeah.
There was also another, I've lost it now, but there was the different people showing up as pilots. All of J.J. Abrams' buddies from all his TV shows, Lost and all that sort of thing, all have one or two lines, including the heavyset guy who you mentioned, who's been in a lot of things. I think, what's his name, who was originally one of the names thrown around to direct it? He directed Cowboys versus Aliens, Vince Vaughn's buddy from Swingers. The heavyset guy, what's he called? John Favreau. Yeah. Apparently he is in it as either a stormtrooper or something else like that. So it was a real sort of Hollywood love fest. Are we done with all the odds and sods for Star Wars?
I think so. We're running pretty long.
Yeah, that's all right. No, within our normal time frame. At the end of the day, yeah, I mean, it was very enjoyable. It's just like I say, you can't. I'm being slightly facetious when I argue against it, because I know that you can't argue against it in isolation. You have to take it for what it is and what it means to people and what it represents in terms of popular culture and everyone's memories. And for that, it was hugely successful.
Carrie Fisher's daughter was in it.
Yeah. Is she a better actress?
But she didn't have to do anything. She was in a background scene. But they did give her like a hairdo.
Oh,
like
they did.
Princess Leia just for like.
Yeah, Princess Leia was the one character I'm like, seriously, we've got this. Get out. And
Bill
get
out. Bill Hader had some role in BB-8.
He like did a
writing.
Yeah, he did some of the writing, and he also, I think that's all where it came to the whole how it acts and interacts and all that kind of thing. Did you see the Adam Driver Saturday Night Live sketch? Oh, yeah. What's it? Undercover Boss. If you haven't seen that online, look for it. It's Adam Driver. It's a parody of the TV reality show Undercover Boss.
He's coming in.
He goes like, undercover.
He's Kylo Ren, but he's coming as like a janitor. And it, like everybody's like.
I'm not going to lie. I will say this about Adam Driver. I had absolutely no familiarity with his career. Yeah. I kept thinking he was the dude from Saturday Night Live that's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Isn't
Adam Sandberg.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know any of these dudes. Until the movie when he takes his hat off, I'm like, ooh. I thought it was the dude from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So there you go.
Right. So now you know how much to respect.
Right, so Star Wars, opinion. Yeah, so Star Wars, we're going to... Yeah, I mean, we predicted... No, I will say this. I think it went beyond our predictions.
Yeah.
We said it was going to be... It wouldn't be great. It wasn't going to suck, I think, was how we paraphrased it on both
the special... Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, my... And I'm not trying to recharacterize it. Mine was a prediction of a minimum. No, I wasn't like, I didn't predict it wasn't going to be great. I just predicted it would at least be this. And so, you know, in other words, I'm saying it's this or better. And so it isn't like it was surprising to me. It was successful.
You know, as we get out of the show, you have recalibrated.
No, I'm not. Go back and listen to the original. I think
it went beyond what we thought it was
going to be. Beyond what you thought. Didn't go beyond what I thought. Possible. If you had given me probabilities, it's beyond, like it would have been in the upper range, like if you give me odds. But it's not surprising to me.
Okay, so here we go. We have the new cat. I'm never going to be able to keep this up. Star Wars, those first three movies are great. Those last three movies sucked, but the very last movie was really good.
There you go.
Copyright Atlantic Voice.
I don't think you get to do that.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.